This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby 138.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, three Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Bradley come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone joining us on Sirius 219, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. Our guest this evening just won her fourth race over the weekend, and she did so in style, riding at Keeneland for trainer Mike Maker. Four wins out of just 22 mounts. She's off to a strong and promising start, and she has a great story to go with it. She's joining us in studio this evening, Katie Claussen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So great to have you, Katie. And you, as I mentioned, are off to a very strong start. That had to be an incredible experience to win at Keeneland.
It really was. I mean, to win anywhere for me is always exciting. But for it to have it be at Keeneland is just, I mean, over the top.
Really, really incredible race that was, Katie. I was watching at work and I was like, oh, we got to get that girl on the show. We got to get her on the show. But how we usually do the show, we usually start from the beginning. Where are you from?
I was born in Mesa, Arizona. Lived there until I was 7. And then shortly thereafter moved to Brazil, Indiana. And very small town, not too much goes on there, but I loved living there. And then lived there until I joined the racetrack and had to move around from place to place. And now we're here.
Now here you are. Why did you move from Arizona to Indiana? That's kind of a big move.
It was. It was because of my father's job. He was a helicopter pilot, and they opened an airbase in Terre Haute, which is a town next to mine. And they needed a pilot, and so that's where we moved.
Wow, helicopter pilot. That is the coolest thing in the world. There must be, y'all must need, you love adrenaline. It must run in your family
I think
something.
It must, because I think, like, I came up with the idea that my dad, he flew in the air, but I get to fly on the ground. I think that's really cool.
That's an awesome way to put it. That's an awesome way to put it, Katie. And do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have two older brothers, a younger brother, and a younger sister.
Wow, so pretty big family. What do they do?
Yeah. My oldest brother is in the seminary to become a priest right now. He's 22, wow. I think, if I'm correct. And then my other older brother is a Marine, and he's in North Carolina. And then there's me in the lineup, and then my younger brother is in high school, plays all kinds of sports. And then my little sister is also in high school, and she plays tennis.
So you're the only one who got into the racetrack?
Yeah, just me. It's I don't know really how it happened that way, but I'm definitely glad it did.
Absolutely. And so you grew up basically in Southern Indiana, mm-hmm, and I'm actually from Southern Illinois, so I know the area. I grew up in the middle of cornfields, so there's not much.
Bingo.
Yeah, not much to talk about from that area. But how did you first get involved with the racetrack in Indiana?
You know, I was watching TVG one day. I don't know how I found it, but I did. And I would just watch it, and it would annoy my family all the time whenever it was on TV, because it was like, it's just you watch the horses and they talk about betting, and you know, if you're not into it, then that's not very interesting. So I would just watch TVG every once in a while, and then happened to watch Zenyatta run her 12th or 13th race that day, and then I just loved it, and so I didn't know how to find out when she was running again or anything about like Blood Horse or the racing form or anything like that. So I just would, whenever I would think about it, I would put on TVG, and so then I kind of like started watching the horse racing movies that I had, and slowly but surely kind of found my way into it. And then it got to take kind of more root into like, you know, actual like about the horses and about racing in general, instead of just kind of, you know, what you see on TV or what's portrayed in movies. And so then I just started following it the best that I could to what my knowledge was at the time. And then it just grew and grew. And then I'm like, okay, so I think I want to do this. I think I'm interested in this. So, you know, what do I want to do with my life? And I decided one day when I was 13 that I wanted to be a jockey. And from then on, I was like, okay, so what now? Like, I made the decision. What do I do now? And I just did my best to kind of get in contact with people who were around my area, sure, who were into racing. And there weren't many. But there were enough, and then slowly but surely just kind of built this thing up, and then just took one step at a time and started riding, started meeting people, and got hooked up with my best friend right now, Danielle Rozier. And she, you know, she helped me get into it and taught me so much. She still does all the time, but she just took me with her, and at the time I was only 15. Wasn't even technically allowed on the racetrack.
Showing up.
And I would follow her around, do whatever I could to help, and she would let me do things, and then got set up with a job on a farm in southern Indiana for Steve Fosdick on his farm there. And I would just started galloping and was not very good for a while, because how are you when you start off?
Nobody is.
Exactly. And so he, thank goodness he didn't mind and gave me a shot. And then I did that all winter and worked with the babies. And then when they went off to Indiana, when the meet opened back up in the spring, they went to the track, and I wasn't ready for that. And so I got the summer off until they came back in the fall, about this time of the year, and then same thing, rode all winter, and then and come the spring, then I was ready.
Then you were ready.
Then I got my license and started galloping at Indiana Downs, which is now Indiana Grand, and rode for Steve some more, and then got a job with Mike Lauer, worked for him all summer, and that was a blast. And then in September of that same year, I started with Tom Amos, and that was a big step up for me, because it was a kind of a different kind of horses, different way of riding that I had to do. And then we moved from Indiana, whenever that meet was done, down south to Louisiana. I was with his second string of horses at Delta Downs, and rode there all winter, and was also there with Danielle. And so it was great. I got to my first move. I got to go with a friend. So it was
good.
I was very thankful that I had someone there with me. And so then spent the winter there, and then came back up to Kentucky, actually to Keeneland. We went straight from Delta to Keeneland, and then breezed here all that whole meet. Then I got to go to Churchill, and I was expecting to move back up to Indiana, but lo and behold, we wound up at Churchill, and that was a huge step for me, because it was around more trainers, people who I, in my mind, eventually wanted to be able to ride for. And so I was really glad that I got to be there with those riders and those people that I could learn from. And it was a great thing to be there. And then rode there all summer, this was just last year. I was okay at Churchill.
Yeah.
And then in July, I was injured. And so I had about 4 months off, and then came back around this time last year. I was just getting back into riding again, and started working for Kellen Gorder at Churchill as well, and John Ortiz, his assistant, and so he taught me a lot. Like, I took the job so that I could really, really learn from a rider and someone who went through the same process that I was going through at the time of really striving to get better, and And John's a very talented rider, so he was a great person to be with. And then from there, we went from Churchill to Keeneland, their barn that's based there year round, and then south to Hot Springs, and we had our barn at Oaklawn this past winter, and did very well there and learned a lot, and was a new experience, new place. Never been there before. And then moved back up here this spring to Keeneland, and I was there all summer when it was quiet, no one was around. And then we decided that I was ready to have a few mounts and just kind of test the waters and see how it went, and it went well. So they put me on my first starter, and her name was Angel of Troy, and she ran second at Churchill.
Nice.
Going a mile. Let's see. I think that was June 12th, 11th or 12th. And then the next day I had another mount, and it was Bonair, who I'm actually named on for tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
At Keeneland. Yes. And, she ran second as well. And then, the following week I was back on another one. It was Street Thunder. And that was at Churchill. I was going a mile, and we won that one.
That was your winning. I would say, Katie, that's pretty good too. I've only had three mounts, and then boom, you win. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. Again, mm-hmm. you have very good statistics. Only 22 mounts, you know, four wins already. And you're, it's funny, you're talking, and so many names you're mentioning are familiar to me, and the racing world is such a small mm-hmm. community, and it's so funny. I do want to mention, Katie, you did grow up riding horses, just not race horses, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, I did. I my parents signed me up when I was little for lessons at a hunter jumper farm in Arizona, and that first day that they took me out there to check out the farm, I think in my mind I had expected that I was going to actually get to ride a horse that day, and no, we were just going to like set up the appointment and the lessons and everything. So I got there and I was like, what? I don't get to ride this horse. And so I think they were so, like, they could tell on my face how disappointed that I was, and sad that they saddled one up for me and let me like walk it around the arena. And so, yeah, I started off doing hunter jumpers, like with lesson horses and just like formal riding lessons and equitation and all that. And then branched into like Western and contesting classes and 4-H classes and little shows around Indiana and things like that. And that's my original horse background.
It sounds so familiar to my own story, Katie. I did 4-H and all that good stuff, but it wasn't ever fulfilling to me. I always wanted to go faster, and mm-hmm. jumping over fences was not enough adrenaline for me anyway. And was that similar for you? It was always fun, of course, but was it just you were always looking for more? Is that how you felt riding?
Yeah, that's kind of how it was for me. I mean, I'm kind of like the practical one, I think, maybe in the family. And I don't know, maybe someone else would disagree with that. But I'm like, how am I going to make a living doing this? Like, I can't imagine that, like, that there's much of an outlet that I was aware of at the time. Right. For, I mean, if I'm doing 4-H or if I'm doing, you know, hunter jumpers. And that just wasn't really exactly what I wanted to do. And so then thankfully this came along, and I was like, yes, I know I could do it. Like, I know how like people do this like for a living, like that's their job. And so that was kind of how it changed into jockey status.
When you first started asking around how to get involved in the racetrack, you mentioned there were a few people in your area who were involved in the racetrack. Was it all positive? Was it all, yes, let me help you out? Or were there any naysayers like, oh, you don't know anything about the sport, you just go do something else?
There was a little bit of both. A couple who attended our church at home, and they had a few racehorses, and they're actually just a few miles up the road from our house. And so they had a farm, and I asked them if they needed anyone to like groom horses or do anything on their farm, and they didn't need any help at the time. And so that didn't really go anywhere. But it was actually a lot of it was through Facebook, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of started through there, you know, if there were a few people like in 4-H that were involved in like quarter horse racing, and but not like that was just kind of a handful of people that were really in my town that I was able to find person to person that wasn't online through Facebook or some sort of social media.
Hey, I tell you what, these days technology is amazing. It's amazing what you can find. Goodness. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But eventually you wound up with Danielle Rozier. You mentioned a great person, influence, who's helped you a lot.
Absolutely.
And then you mentioned several names. Mike Lauer, I rode a horse for him in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And Tom Amos, of course, is such a talented trainer. What did he teach you? Tom Amos, you mentioned him a lot. What did he teach you as far as riding and how to be an accomplished rider?
Tom influenced me a lot in terms of kind of how I sat on a horse. He told me that I have quiet hands, and that was something that I heard a lot from him, and that he I think he was happy about. I mean, me galloping his horses, that's always going to help how your horses train if they're good and relaxed and everything. So that's I made sure that I kept up with doing that and didn't kind of go backwards in a sense of my riding and change that up and start getting too handsy with a horse or anything. Sure. So I just, he helped me to really focus on that part, being quiet and looking nice on the horses. And
you mentioned his horses were different. How are they different?
With a lot of his horses, they have class to them.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I found, that they're, and you know, and to any trainer, if you go from one barn to another, you know, if you just go down the shed row, like, you're going to find someone who wants to train horses probably a little differently than another trainer.
Right.
And their horses kind of will probably act accordingly. And some trainers take them slower, some take them faster. And in Tom's horses, they were just a little different than what I was used to. And it was a good change. It was just, you know, being around a different type of horse. And, you know, it made me more experienced with different attitudes and different temperaments of horses and a different training style. So it was, you know, no matter who I was working for, I always saw it as a good thing because it was another person I was with, another type of horse that I was able to be around, and it helped me out in the long run for sure.
In my opinion, it's so much easier to learn on those good, classy horses. Mm-hmm. And that's just, there's nothing like sitting on a nice horse like that and learning. And
yeah.
They'll teach you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And two, I think, what helped me a lot was actually starting with some babies, like breaking babies. I think there was one winter that I helped break, I think, like 7 on the farm. And that really, I mean, that makes sure that you're tied on with those horses.
You better be. You better be.
So it that helped me a lot, too, with, you know, if you ever you get a silly one, you know, that you can be confident and, like, you know how to ride it. Like, even if it throws a buck or rears up, like, you're not going to freak out. You're okay.
What's your opinion on that? I've heard different opinions, and I think it's great for younger riders, new riders, to learn on babies because you're both learning at the same time and you figure things out along the way. But I've heard other people say you should only have experienced riders break babies. What's your opinion on that? And do you think that was good in your learning process?
I think in my situation, it definitely was a good thing. In general, I think that a rider probably is best off if they have some sort of riding background first.
Sure.
So like with me, with riding other horses and, you know, broke normal horses, it was fine. But I mean, if someone is just starting out and, like, hasn't ridden a horse, definitely would not say get on a baby. But I mean, if they're just starting off riding in general, I mean, you know, throw them on an older horse, put them on like a little training jack and just let them kind of tool around there and get used to it. And then, you know, you can step back to the babies, and I think with them, like, you'd really need to have that sense of, like, you know, like the horses, if you need to be quiet with them, if you're on like a nervous filly or something and you need to sit quietly there, or if you're on a pushy colt that, you know, needs a good kick or something like that, you know, and that's where just kind of that general horse knowledge really comes into play, I think.
Jockey Katie Claussen joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Katie, you mentioned you were injured, and I read about your injury, and my gosh, where do we begin with that? Were you galloping for Tom Amos at the time?
I was, yes. It was that day. It was first set in the morning, right about 6:20, and I was on a 2-year-old colt, and it was his first breeze alone. He'd kind of been a little bit of a trouble child. And so, you know, I didn't think twice about it. And, you know, it was just, you know, it was time for him to go alone, and that was fine. And so he was, I had a pony with me and broke off. We were just going a half mile and broke me off from the pole, and then we started the breeze and everything was fine. And then he kind of changed his mind on the breeze, and he wound up bolting to the outside fence. And this is middle of the summer at Churchill Downs. That's a really busy time there. So it's, there was a lot of horses on the track at the time. And so he went all the way to the outside rail. And then I honestly don't know exactly what I hit. But people who were around me, they said that my body hit the rail and then my neck hit the post that holds up the rail. So one way or another, it was not good. Whatever I hit, it was bad.
Yeah.
And, but so I came out of that with, and I was unconscious for a short time, and I woke up like face down in the dirt and couldn't move. And I was, I thank goodness for adrenaline and shock, honestly, because, I would have been in much more pain had it not been for that. But, you know, I managed to, like, I rolled over and, you know, people were telling me not to move. And I wasn't going anywhere. and so then they, you know, they cut the horse. There actually wound up being two loose horses at the same time on track. And, but so I came out of that with a fractured vertebrae and, a fractured, rib and then a bruised lung. And so I was in the hospital for a few days. They did surgery later on that day and, everything went fine. You know, they were happy with the progress that I was making. And then I got out of the hospital and, I was just went home for like 2 weeks. And then I wasn't going home. I was not going back home to Indiana. I was not going to be with my mom. I was going to stay in Louisville. And as soon as I was able to, I was going to be back at the track, just at least watching. But, that didn't happen. I was not, my mom told me that I was not going to stay there, that in fact, I was going home. And she was going to help me. And because I couldn't do anything myself. I couldn't pick up anything. So so I went home for 2 weeks and then there was one day I just couldn't take anymore. I couldn't, you know, I had my horses at home, but they weren't race horses. And it wasn't the racetrack. And so I went back to Louisville and then I continued working for Tom and he needed another person around the track to watch his horses train. Be another pair of eyes. And so it was crazy how things happened, but it was really a blessing in disguise because I got a chance to spend time with him and watch, you know, get to talk about training and get to talk about what he sees in his horses and what he looks for. And my own opinions myself. And so I would go to the front side with him and watch breezes and we'd talk about breezes and talk about, you know, my plans and everything like that. So I really, really got to learn a lot in that time when I wasn't riding. And I was really grateful for it. And I still am, because I could physically see riders from a different perspective. I could stand up in the grandstand at Churchill and I could watch and see, oh, this guy needs to put his hands down. This guy needs to let the horse out, pick him up, you know, do this or that. And it really, you know, changed how I started riding whenever I was coming back. And so that was a very good thing. I'm not glad I got hurt. But, you know, I'm okay and I'm smarter because of it. And, you know, I do things differently now because of that in a good way, you know. And I'm, you know, not any more scared than I was, you know, before I got on a horse. I've honestly never been scared on a horse, I don't think. And and so, you know, it hasn't affected me in that way. You know, it's just really just made me smarter. And so I'm glad I came out of it okay and can keep on and, you know, learn new things because of it.
When you were recovering back in Indiana, only 2 weeks, which you fractured vertebrae in your neck,
yep,
right? And they had to like fuse them together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a very serious, and a bruised lung on top of it. So that's a very, very serious injury. And 2 weeks to take it easy is not nearly long enough in, you know, most people's eyes. But, you know, we're all a little bit crazy jockeys. And so we all want to come back as soon as possible. And while you were home, did your parents ever question, you know, what you were doing with your life? Like, maybe you should do something else. This is too dangerous. You know, what did they say?
You know, my mom, I think she's always been supportive of me regardless. You know, if I'm good at it, if I can support myself, if it's really what I should be doing with my life, you know, she's going to support me. And we had like good conversations about if it was still the right path for me, if it changed my mind at all. And it didn't. It just, so, you know, we were smart about everything. We talked And she just wanted to make sure that I was going to be okay and was set up in the right, you know, had everything I needed. And so it, you know, it rattled both of us for sure, but you know, we're still here and it was a good experience in the end. And, just now we're all smarter and more seasoned.
How long did it take for you to actually get back in the saddle?
You know, I think start to finish, it was about 4 months.
4 months.
And I was hoping that what the doctor told me was actually, he was going to give me like a longer time frame than what it was going to actually be. That was what I was banking on. I was banking on like, okay, maybe like 2.5 months.
Yes.
And no, that didn't happen. Yeah. Like, oh, you know, if I just really like do what they need me to do, then it'll be okay. But no, it was the full 4 months like he told me. And then by that time, you know, I kind of missed like the second half of the summer. And then it was like the fall meet at Churchill when I was coming back. And it was, I think, like the week before Thanksgiving in November. And started with a new barn, new set of horses. And then before long, I was over back at Keeneland. And then I, you know, spent my whole time getting fit again and everything like that. And that was kind of rough, but it also, I was able to kind of reform my muscles in a different way. It helped me to actually kind of keep more quiet on a horse because I didn't have the muscle built up that I had for like 2 years of galloping. And so it kind of helped me in terms of wanting to be a jockey to kind of lean out a little more, to not have that bulky muscle. And so it helped me to keep my hands down and use like more, for instance, more triceps instead of like biceps when you're holding a horse or something like that. And then just started with Kellen after that and on to Oakland.
It's funny you mentioned that about bulkiness and muscles because that I had a very hard time with. I'm tall, and when I was starting out, I had a tough time with the weight, and it was because I was so bulky from galloping horses. Mm-hmm. So that makes perfect sense, and muscle obviously weighs more than fat.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny because when you're galloping horses, you're trying to hold them back. When you're riding, you're actually pushing and trying to get them to go for the most part. But that is very interesting that and it worked out well overall in everything, it sounds like, even though obviously it sucks to get injured, but it all worked out well. We will continue our visit with jockey Katie Clausen after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Luis Quinones had a great Oklahoma Classics night at Remington Park as he won 3 stakes on the card. Quinones finished the week with 4 wins, 1 second, and 1 third place finish. Irad Ortiz Jr. won 2 stakes on Belmont's Empire Showcase Day, including the Empire Classic aboard Royal Posse. Ortiz finished the week with 4 wins, 7 seconds, and 9 third place finishes. Julian Leperu maintained his spot atop the rider standings at Keeneland in wins and earnings by winning 26% of his mounts and earning over $400,000. The Frenchman also won the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run Stakes aboard Lightstream. Leperoux finished the week with 7 wins, 1 second, and 2 third-place finishes. Finally, the Shufflebean Coffee Jockey of the Week, Javier Castellano, had another big week as he tied John Davila Jr. for the most wins in North America with 12. Castellano also led North America in earnings with more than $770,000 by winning 41% and coming in the money on 76% of his mounts. Castellano finished the week with 12 wins, 4 seconds, and 6 third-place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, explores everything that goes into winning a race from the rider's perspective. Written by award-winning turf riders Bob Fortas and Gary West, the book explores how jockeys land mounts, how they plan strategy, and what they are doing as a race unfolds. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Doodle Hopper looking toward the outside from the fifth position. Tries to get involved here for Calvin Burrell off the turn. Newfound Gold now swinging out to the center of the track as well. Fancy Man has taken the lead, though. Leads it a length. Newfound Gold sets sail from the outside and tackles the leader moving by the eighth pole. And Fancy Man is fighting on with a narrow lead. Newfound Gold is right alongside coming to the 16th pole. Newfound Gold edging to the front from the outside. Apprentice jockey Katie Clawson, fourth career victory for her. Her first at Keeneland. Newfound Gold to win it from Fancy Man, home second. Long way back to Doodle Hopper and Moon Gun.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Katie Clawson. Katie, we just heard the replay of your victory at Keeneland, and I was watching you, and you were smiling while you were listening to that. That's a good memory. That's an awesome memory.
Very, very good memory, for sure.
So we were talking about before the break your injury and how you were coming back and how it was actually a blessing in disguise. You learned a lot about training. You talked with Tom Amos, and you were able to get fit, riding fit. And so the moment when you decided you were ready to ride races, what was your thought process there? Who told you? Did anyone, or were you seeking advice from anyone as far as when you would be ready to ride?
My main people that I looked to for advice on my readiness to ride were Callan Gorder, who I was working for, and John Ortiz, who was assistant, and he was the main person helping me with the riding aspect. So those people were the ones who I really, really looked for their advice. And so, you know, I really, even when I made that first start, I was still seeing like, okay, am I ready? Because you can't know unless you do it. So even going into that race, you know, it's still like, you know, like questionable as to whether I was going to continue on with this or if we were going to take more time and step back and revisit certain things of my riding. You know, if I got out there and I was just a complete, you know, space, like, and I forgot everything I needed to remember about how to ride a horse, obviously we were going to take a step back. And but it went well, and so then we, you know, we continued on. But so those were the people that I really, really looked to as my base for advice in my riding and whether to start or not.
You remember that first race? Was it, I remember mine, it was so fast. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, wow, I'm tired. What were your thoughts following the race?
Following the race, I was like, wow, I want to do that again.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And actually, going into the race, I was like, okay, am I going to remember any of this? Is it going to be like, you know, like I was told by John that, you know, he's like, you won't remember anything. It'll be like, oh, you break, ride, you know, done. Oh, there was the wire right back there. Yes. Now we're finished. Stand up. So I think maybe that kind of did prepare me a little bit, like thinking, okay, you know, maybe I won't remember it. Maybe it'll be okay and I'll just go back and watch the replay. But so I think that kind of helped me to actually kind of think through things a little bit better, just being that, having that that thought in my mind already. And so I really did remember just kind of about everything about the race. I remember, you know, she broke well and then I kind of took her up a little bit and because I didn't expect to be in the lead. And then after the fact, I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have taken away the run from her. But so I broke on the lead and then kind of sat and rode down the backside and was a little wide because on that kind of dog leg turn at Churchill, it uh, it makes this kind of funky turn going a mile. And I was a little wide there because I wasn't expecting it and hadn't ridden the course before. And then just kind of sat there around the turn and then slowly made my way up. And then the horse on the lead was, I think the jock was Joe Rocco. And I just ranged up on his outside and then came wide out of the turn and then straightened up and just made my run at him. And we couldn't get there with that day. But yeah, and then afterwards, you know, Joe, he kind of gave me some advice on like on how to ride. But yeah, I mean, that was my run through with that race. And then the next day I had another one coming up and I got to do it again. I remember most of that one too. That was a little more hectic. I think that was only going 6.5 furlongs, but that was a different kind of scenario. So it was really good to be able to do like, you know, 2 races, 2 days, different types of horses, different types of running styles and a race setup. And I think that's helped me a lot.
What did Kellen and Johnny have to say after that first ride anyway?
They were, you know, I think that they were really proud because I think I did them proud. I didn't space out. I didn't, you know, just completely forget everything and maybe look like, you know, someone who it was their first ride. They were happy with it for sure because she ran a good race and I rode a pretty good race myself and so they were happy and we kept the filly it wasn't a climbing race or anything, so we got her, we were able to bring her back and try again with her next time so they were happy, I was happy and it was great with the owners too, everyone all around. I mean, it was a very, very good day.
You mentioned Joe Rocco gave you advice after the race as well. And how were the riders in the room to deal with? Obviously, you know, the girls' room is not very big. But were any of the guys helpful? Did they give you advice before or after the race?
The guys have always been helpful to me. I don't care if it's criticism. It's something that I need to hear. I haven't run into someone who's been, you know, just a pain to be around or, you know, has been overly rude or anything like that, thankfully. It's been, and you know, and going into it, I was curious to see how that dynamic was going to work out, just being, you know, one of the girls in the jocks room and not being too many female jockeys in Kentucky right now. So far it's been great working with those guys and being with riders of the caliber that they are around here. And you know, being with safe, good, smart riders, and who really just—I mean, above all—want to be safe out there. They want everyone to—I mean, hopefully, everyone wants a good, safe ride. You know, clean ride. Don't want to sabotage each other or anything like that. And so, being with riders like that has really, really helped me to keep and to be like that. I mean, to have my sights set on being a rider like that. And so, it is. It's been very good being around these jocks in Kentucky and especially here at Keeneland, because there are some other jocks who come in from other states, of course, and then I get to see how those riders ride and what they're see what they think about in the race and how they ride and then get their advice too, and being from like New York riders are a little different than maybe California riders or Kentucky riders. Like I think New York is kind of more of an aggressive type of riding. Mm-hmm. And so having some riders come in from New York, like I can kind of hone in on watching those guys as they're here and riding next to them. Like, you know, I've had that happen too. Well, my few starts here at Keeneland and so it's been very good riding with these guys here.
As it is, I mentioned, easier, I think, in most ways to learn on good, classy horses. It's also easier to learn when you're surrounded by good people, good riders, and people who support you, and it sounds like you have that, Katie, and that's awesome. And so shortly after those first two rides, you got your first winner.
I did.
And tell us about that day.
Yeah, that was you know, honestly, I was more nervous that day than I was either of my two rides, because I knew that if I didn't win that race, it was because I messed up. Because she was the best horse in the race and she should have been the winner, and thankfully that's how it went down. And that was another mile race at Churchill. Again, rode that course the week before, so I knew like not to go too wide here or there. She actually broke. She took kind of an awkward stumble step out of the gate, And then just, you know, we kind of held our position. So I think we were second or third down the backside. And then around the half mile pole took over and just kept the lead from there out. And then coming into the lane, asked her to run and drew away. And I think we won by like 5 1/4. We did lose her that day. She was claimed. Oh. Funny enough, by Tom Amos.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. Tom claimed her and went on and won a few more races with her up in Indiana. And then she was, I think, claimed here at Keeneland this past week or week or two. But definitely kept tabs on her because that's you can ask anyone who their first winner was, you know, jockey or trainer or anything like that. They're going to remember. And so that was an incredible day. That was really, really fun. You know, and then the jocks, they got me with the water and the shaving cream and let's see what else, the baby powder and all that. And that was, oh man, that smelled terrible. That was a bad smell. Oh, and the eggs. That was what did it.
Oh, that's what did what did it. I watched a video. It was going around Facebook, I think. I watched a video. That was awesome. They got you good, too. Mm-hmm.
They did. Yeah, coming did. Straight up the stairs and everyone's like, oh, congratulations. And here's the water.
But it's such a good feeling, though. It's such a good feeling, even though you're getting doused with eggs and baby powder. It's like you made it.
Yeah,
you made exactly. it. And that's such a great, great feeling. Mm-hmm. Did you celebrate afterwards that day?
I can't remember what even I did that day. I think I can't remember if I had a ride the next. I may have had a mount the next day, and I don't think I could really celebrate the way I wanted to with food.
But, yes.
But I think what we did was we went out to eat at a little place by the track in Louisville. And so, yeah, I was with friends. Oh, and my mom, she couldn't be there that day. Oh. She was there the two previous races, but she couldn't be there that day because my younger brother was playing, let's see, it was baseball. Yeah, his team won state in baseball. And so that was like one of the playoff games before they got to state or something like that. And so, you know, I definitely wasn't mad because it was, I mean, good reason. And she had just been with me. So, but yeah, my mom wasn't there. And actually, the race after me that day, Danielle ran Folded Wings. And so she wasn't up there either.
Oh gosh.
she was back in the barn getting the filly ready but she did. She was over at the trainer stand as I pulled up and I could hear her screaming at me. There's a video of that on Facebook too. And so then like Greg Blossy, the outrider, he picked me up because I said you might need to pick me up after this one because I might be tired or too excited to stop her. And so he picked me up. I had her fine. Like I wasn't, you know, I was gonna get her stopped, but he picked me up and he was super, super happy for me and took me all the way back there, back to the winner's circle, and then it was great, great little picture that we got with John and Kellen and everyone who was there for me.
Exciting moment, exciting moment, Katie. Tell us about. Of course, we heard the replay of your fourth victory. Tell us about your second and third victories.
Let's see. My second victory was Wings. That would be Folded Wings for my best friend Danielle. Like I said, and that was kind of a crazy day because I had a mount. I had an mount at Ellis Park and a horse that I was galloping. I was really looking forward to the race. And then so I was down for 2 mounts that day. And then I picked up a mount at the last race at Ellis that day and rode it. And then my mom was with me. She drove me back from Ellis to Churchill so that I could like sleep in the car because I was exhausted. And it was night racing. It was the last day of Churchill. It was closing day of Churchill this spring. And so that was Downs After Dark. And I think the race went off at like 10:30 at night or something. Racetrack bedtime. Like that was much past, like I was going to turn into a pumpkin. It was past my bedtime for sure. And so then we got there and I went up into the room and like you can hear the music still pounding through the walls. Like it's such a big party there those nights. And so I knew how I thought the filly would run. And we kind of wanted to change up her running style a little bit and let her go on the lead. And because with the weight off, with the 10 pounds, and I'd breezed her once before and she responded well to me and relaxed for me. So I knew that I wanted to see if I could get her out of the gate. And it was on the turf. It was mile 16th on the turf. So I wanted to get over and from that 12-hole post that we were in and try and clear and not be too wide into the turns. And so we managed to break well after she didn't want to load in the gate. She took a long time to get her into the gate. And then she broke really well. And then we were able to cross over in front of the horses and clear them. And then we went wire to wire and she held on, I think, by about a length, and that was my second win, and that was super, super meaningful. I mean, being from a best friend, of course, that was going to be an incredible experience, and I love the filly. Like, I've been around her since Danielle's had her when she was 4 years old, and so then my third win came at Ellis Park with a horse called Total Immersion, also for Kellen, and I think that was 5,000 claiming race going 6 furlongs, I think, and that was one of my favorite rides actually that I've had. The horse, he was in behind and just like stalking in behind the leaders, and all I needed was room. All I needed was to get out, and a few of my starts prior to that, I'd been on a horse where I was kind of in the same position and I couldn't get out, and that was just the first time that I'd been in a race situation like that where I, you know, needed to learn to look for those holes, like just to be like on the lookout for, you know, if you need to get out, you got to be looking for it, and it's not just going to open up for you. So I told myself before that was not going to happen again. And so being on this horse, that was just like a loaded cannon under me. I was just looking, and there really wasn't a hole. Like, if you watch the replay, there really wasn't room there. We kind of made our room, and I just stuck it. I just put his head out, like, next to the horse that was with me, because we were making a move at the same time. And I knew that if he got ahead of me, that I wasn't going to get out, that was my hole. And so I just tilted his nose out and just went with that horse to my outside. And we ranged up, I think we were like 3 wide on the outside of the 2 leaders, and we got through. And he's a big colt, so he you know, when he was in there, he was gonna make his room, and we, of course, I was safe about it. I mean, I didn't there, you know, didn't put him into trouble or anything, and then he got clear and he was gone, and he was the best horse that day, and he was claimed, and I'm not sure where he's now, but he was that was a really fun win, just being at another track at Ellis, and a fun day with my mom and friends there, and that was a really, really, really fun day.
So Katie, you've kind of taken it slowish on your way, you know, you kind of from what I hear, making sure you don't just bam go and burn out your buck too quick.
Correct.
You know, you want to kind of take your time because you have a particular goal in mind. Please tell our listeners what you're thinking.
Yeah, I've put my sights on an Eclipse Award. I know that an Eclipse Award does not make a rider, but it will not hurt to have that under your belt.
Of course.
So, you know, I didn't want to win my fourth race too soon, because if that happened and then like I get put up on a horse and it's a fluke, you know, and you just like have this horse pop up and you win, and then, oh crap, that was your fifth win. Now your bug has started. Now it's August, and it's the middle of the year, and the Eclipse Awards are judged from calendar year to calendar year, and so you get like half your buck this year, half your buck that the next year. So and I was advised by quite a few jockeys to particularly James Graham, because he was kind of in that same position himself. He told me when he was a bug, and his bug was kind of split between like 7 months 1 year, and then finished up the rest of it the following year, and so he's always told me to really wait as long as I can, and so that's what we decided to do. To kind of take a step back and put it on pause and not continue on, and so that really allowed me to continue learning about how I wanted to ride and how to ride better, and to just keep watching races, keep riding the Equisizer, keep getting stronger, and just doing the smart thing by my career. And so now it's finally fall. It's finally close enough to the new year to where we started up again, and we picked a very tough meet to do it, but it's a very very watched meet. So it's allowed me to be seen by a lot of people and to ride for good trainers and good horses. So now I'm going for it. Like, it's time. And so, like you said, won the fourth race the other day. And hopefully you can get another one tomorrow in this new week at Keeneland.
Full steam ahead, Katie.
Yeah.
What are your plans for the winter? Where are you going
to
go?
My winter plans are to go to Fairgrounds. Yeah, that's where so many people in Kentucky go to. That I have that business going for me right now, so I'm just going to follow with it and do as best I can down there. And I think that'll go really well. you know, other riders I've talked to about it, and they think that that'll be a good fit for me. And I've never been there, but never been fairgrounds, but I think it'll be a good move.
Have you talked with Rosina Pravnik at all? We had her on the show a couple months ago.
You know, I haven't, and I really think I should.
Definitely should.
I've talked to her husband a few times, having ridden some of his horses in the mornings, but I have not spoken to her specifically on my riding career yet. So I'll have to get that kind of sorted out here, I guess.
Definitely. She's a great one to go to mm-hmm. for advice, and she obviously did so well in her own career. And Katie, I want to talk a little bit about, we only have a couple minutes left. I can't believe this hour is flying by. You're not just interesting in the horse world, but you also have something else that I find very fascinating. You recently traveled overseas, and tell us why you did that and where you went.
Yeah, over the summer, at the end of July, I went on a pilgrimage to Rome and Poland with my youth group from back home in Indiana. There were about 100 of us.
Wow.
We took two planes, two buses everywhere we went. And so that was for what is called World Youth Day. And that's every 3 years. The Pope is there. It's at a different location every time. And so it's for people kind of around my age, anywhere from, you know, high school up until, you know, your young adult years. And so it was just a really great experience to deepen my faith and to get to go. I mean, it wasn't a vacation. It was a trip with purpose. And so I wanted to go on this to really deepen my faith, like I said, and to get to see the Catholic Church in Rome and what it's like. And how different it is from the church here in the United States. And so we spent 3 days in Rome and saw some amazing, amazing churches, St. Peter's Basilica and the Vatican, and the other major basilicas that are there in Rome. And then went over to Poland and had a great time in there in Poland with all the World Youth Day activities and like mass in the rain and mass with the Pope, on separate occasions and getting to do kind of the pop-up sessions that were for like the English speaking people. Cause there are people literally from around the world, like wow. I've all over the place, and you go there and, you know, you take your country's flags and it just becomes this big, really big, huge, like fun community. We showed up and we were kind of like apprehensive. Everyone's like chanting their country's songs that they brought with them and their national anthems or whatever they have going. And then we got off the bus and we were kind of like just all being quiet. And then slowly but surely we kind of all came out of our shells. We're like, oh, this is a good thing. Like, okay, like we can do this. This is cool. And then we all got into it. We all just like kind of went full blown, like USA chants and everything. And so we're walking around like three priests and like these hundred kids and around my age and adult chaperones. And like my mom was there and my two of my siblings were there. And so that was something that I would absolutely want to do again.
Yeah.
I would go to both of those places again. I'd go to another World Youth Day. I would do that in a heartbeat if I was able to. And it really was something that I needed. Like I got that little time to kind of, you know, to see what, why I do what I do. You know, I do it. You know, my life isn't just about horses. It's primarily about my faith in God and you know why I'm here. And I think that why I'm here is to ride horses and to use my natural talents with what I've been given. And so, you know, when I came back, I had this feeling of like, wow, I don't want to lose that joy. Like, I want to keep that happy feeling that I have of peace and knowing that this is what I'm supposed to do. And I think everyone should have an experience like that in their lives. I think they should, you know, do that as often as they can. Really refresh themselves in more ways than just, you know, like taking a good nap, you know, like us racetrackers do. Like you really need a full-fledged like spiritual experience, and that was what I was blessed to get this summer.
Sounds like a very amazing, fulfilling experience, Katie. And is that, does that help you in a career where it's so dangerous? We have an ambulance following us mm-hmm. around the track. Is it good for you? Do you have a sense of peace when you go out there to ride, knowing that there's a higher power who's watching out for you? Does that help you?
It does. It absolutely does. It puts me, um, it put, puts me at peace knowing that, you know, that day that I was hurt, I literally was talking with the pony girl about Oriana Rossi, who had just 2 days been earlier injured. And I said, you know, I have to know that if that was me, if I was her, that that would be what God had for me. Not that it's a good thing, but that there was purpose in it. Even if I was one of those people who's in a wheelchair, that I have a reason to be there and I can do something good because of it. So that has, I don't know if I would be able to do it if I didn't have that sense. If I didn't have that faith and that background, that I don't know if I could do it, because, you know, if this is all we have, then why put yourself in danger? So knowing that there's more, that really, really helps me a lot every day.
That's so well said, Katie, and only a couple minutes left, like I said, but what would you tell if a young girl came up to you at the racetrack and she said, Katie, how do I get involved in the sport? What advice would you give her, and what would you tell her? How would you tell her to do it?
I would tell her to learn as much as she can before she gets into the business, to really learn and study and to figure out what path she wants. You know, if it's galloping, if it's riding races, to just be very knowledgeable beforehand, because that got me very far. Just being able to go up to someone and talk about, you know, current events or something that I see about a horse, like that got people's attention with me. Is that I was able to talk about different aspects of the sport. So I would tell a girl to do that herself, and then to find good people, to just find someone who can really, that she could really trust, and that she'd feel comfortable with, and that could kind of take her under her wing and guide her in the right way. Because, I mean, just like anywhere, you never know who really has their best interest in mind. So just to be smart about it, and to not get in a hurry, because that's what I wanted to do. I really wanted to, like, oh, I'm gonna ride when I'm 16. I'm gonna, you know, I started a year ago. I better be riding races this time next year. But that's not how it happens. So you just to be smart and to go slow and to learn from everyone, whether it's what to do or what not to do, to just learn and watch from everyone.
Well, you've definitely done it the right way, Katie, and you're only 19. My gosh, you still have so long, so far ahead of you, and you have a passion for it, and that's another important thing, of course, you have to have to absolutely ride, because the injuries and the dangerous aspects of it and the waking up early, you got to love it, and you obviously do. Katie, thank you so much for joining us, and wishing you all the best, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really very glad to be here and glad to spend the time with you.
Thanks to Katie. You can check out this show and replays of all other 75 episodes of Jock Talk on our website, horseracingradio.net. Don't forget to check out Equine Forum, Express Bet Radio, and our sister show Trainer Talk while you're there. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.